Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for Tuesday, April 23rd, 2024. I'm your reader, Grace Barter. Police are investigating a break-in at a neighborhood convenience store. Authorities said the thieves broke out the glass door to Speedy Mart, 926 Lynn Street, around 11:49 p.m. Thursday. After taking merchandise, they left and returned a few hours later, around 1:50 a.m. on Friday, for more. Police said the suspects took alcohol and vape items, and the crime was captured on video. No arrests have been made in the burglar. Police are investigating gunfire that broke out in a Waterloo neighborhood early Monday morning. Neighbors called 911 around 1 a.m. after hearing gunshots in an area of Sunnyside Avenue and West Wellington Street. Officers found six spent shell casings at the scene, but no damage or injuries were reported. No arrests have been made in the incident. A Waterloo man has been arrested for allegedly stealing guns and high-end jewelry from a Des Moines home. Prince Tarkpur Gala, 25, of 224 Palmer Street, formerly of Baltimore, was arrested Thursday on a Polk County warrant for first-degree theft and third-degree burglary. He was transferred to Des Moines. Bond was set at $15,000. Authorities allege Gala and another person removed firearms and a safe with jewelry from a house on East 30th Street in Des Moines on the afternoon of March 28th. The weapons included an AK-47 rifle with a folding stock, a Draco AK-47 pistol, and a Kel-Tec KS-7 shotgun. The jewelry was valued at $10,000. The crime was captured on video, records state. Police arrested a man early Sunday after chasing him through three cities, eventually catching him with the help of stop sticks. The Cedar Falls Public Safety Department says the pursuit started in the early morning hours while trying to pull over DeMarco Dante Harris, 38, in the area of West 12th and College Streets for speeding. He eluded authorities through Cedar Falls, Waterloo, and Elk Run Heights before being arrested without incident in Waterloo. He was booked into the Black Hawk County Jail at 2:17 a.m. Harris was charged with a second offense eluding, a felony. He was also arrested on a domestic assault warrant for impeding air and blood flow and a warrant for violation of parole. The charge is related to causing injury to another person by choking them or obstructing their nose or mouth, according to Iowa code. His license had been suspended, and he was cited for various traffic violations. Harris is being held in the jail at a bond of $12,300. Cedar Falls, Evansdale, and Waterloo police were assisted by the Iowa State Patrol, Black Hawk County Sheriff's Office, and Merle's Auto Service. A Waterloo man has been arrested for allegedly breaking into two businesses. Police arrested Jasmine Kudick, 29, for two counts of third-degree burglary on Sunday. Bond was set at $7,000. Authorities allege Kudick broke into Cedar Valley Auto Detailing, 306 West 11th Street, around 6:30 a.m. on April 14th. He also allegedly used a large rock to smash open a window on the front door at Valleywide Towing, 1118 Jefferson Street, and take $500 in cash that same morning. He also took keys to the business's vehicle and rummaged through the vehicles, court records state. Officers obtained video footage of at least one of the break-ins, according to court records. Kudick is currently on parole for a 2016 pharmacy robbery and has prior convictions for a 2013 BB gun holdup at a convenience store and a 2014 home burglary. two men from Natchez, Mississippi, were injured in a single vehicle crash Friday night on U.S. Highway 20 near Jessup. The Iowa State Patrol reported a 2001 GMC Yukon was traveling eastbound at mile marker 240 at 8:01 p.m. when it entered the median, overcorrected, crossed back over the lane, and rolled into a ditch. The passenger was ejected. That person and the driver were transported by ambulance to Mercy One Waterloo Medical Center for their injuries. The State Patrol was assisted on scene by the Black Hawk County Sheriff's Office, Jessup Police Department and Ambulance, and Gilbertville Fire Department. First responders were seen investigating at least 90 minutes after the crash. Waterloo continues to stay at the top of the list for the cheapest water and sewer rates in Iowa. An annual survey from the City of Ames released last week shows Waterloo property owners pay less for their water. The study surveys Iowa water and sewer utilities with a reported population of 10,000 or more. Of the 10 largest cities in Iowa, Waterloo has the lowest combined rates for both residential and commercial properties based on the average volume. Homeowners pay $47.55 total per month based on the average use of 600 cubic feet of water. Commercial property owners pay $69.11 per month based on 1,000 cubic feet of water. Out of the 13 cities that don't have a water softening plant, Coralville had the lowest residential water rates at $15.71. Waterloo came in second at $17.80. Cedar Falls had the seventh lowest rate at $26.36. And Waverly had the 8th lowest at $29.16. Waterloo had the lowest commercial rate at $26.48. Cedar Falls came in 7th at $37.30 and Waverly in 9th at $48.60. The American Water Company, which serves Bettendorf, Clinton, and Davenport, has the highest water rates. Out of all 43 cities, Waterloo had the 7th lowest residential sewer rate at $29.75 and 6th lowest commercial sewer rate at $40.63. Cities with even lower rates include Lamar's, Mason City, Bettendorf, and Council Bluffs. Cedar Falls had the 20th lowest residential sewer rate at $42.15 and 18th lowest commercial sewer rate at $59.75. Waverly had the 27th lowest residential sewer rate at $47.04 and 35th lowest commercial sewer rate at $78.40. The city of Oskaloosa has the highest sewer rates. The survey does not include garbage or stormwater fees, which are collected on the same bills in Waterloo. But Mayor Quentin Hart said they're competitive too. A long-time family-owned Waverly company has been acquired with growth, not changes, in mind. St. Martin Holdings Company of Cedar Rapids announced last week, as first reported by Waverly newspapers, that it has acquired Rada Cutlery. The change comes after the knife company celebrated 75 years of existence since 1948. "We're super excited and couldn't envision a better fit," said Nick Tabor, president of St. Martin, during a telephone interview. The Rada family has now relinquished control for the first time since Sandra Rada Olive purchased the business with her late husband Walt back in 1969, according to board chairman Gary Nelson. At that time, it operated in Waterloo as W.C. Gedke Cutlery Company. Sandra Rada Olive, her daughter, Sarah Rada Scott, and son-in-law, Thomas Scott, were still part of the Rada Manufacturing Company ownership group. group. Breda Cutlery has close to 100 employees and some 35,000 customers, said Nelson, a family confidant and former CEO of the company. Its loan facility, 905 Industrial Street in Waverly, spans 56,000 square feet and has capabilities of producing 4 to 5 million knives per year. Phil Jones is its president. Selling was of interest as Nelson and the Rada relatives got older and were looking to spend more time with family. It's the fourth operating company in St. Martin's portfolio and was a match in large part because of its generational existence, according to Tabor, a Waverly native who was in Sandra Rada's third grade class at Margaretta Carey Elementary School while she was teaching there. At Midwest Home Base and American-made products were other reasons. A purchase is never made with short-term flipping on the table, he said. St. Martin is supporting a company in growth through capital investments and commercial growth strategy. We don't acquire with the intention of making drastic changes, Tabor said. He emphasized that includes a desire to keep existing leadership in place. That deal ultimately came together quicker than expected. Tabor noted Rada was on a short list of companies St. Martin had interest in and would regularly check in to see if leadership was willing to sell. The sale closed April 12th, and employees were informed Wednesday, said Tabor. The sides are declining to disclose the price. Nelson described the family's decision to move on as bittersweet, but noted his confidence in St. Martin. We weren't looking for top dollar, rather the best deal for Waverly, he said. The 1619 Freedom School was honored with the prestigious Iowa State Education Association's 2024 Paul Mann Memorial Human Relations Award. This recognition celebrates the school's outstanding contributions and the dedication of its educators and supporters. Sherita Stokes, co-director and curriculum coordinator, accepted the award on behalf of the organization. The award honors individuals or groups for their exemplary contributions to advancing human and civil rights. Named after the late Paul Mann, a stalwart champion of civil and human rights causes, this award not only recognizes the contributions of its recipients, but also serves as a catalyst encouraging others in their human and civil rights efforts. It fosters the development of programs for advancing and protecting human and civil rights among ISEA members. The 1619 Freedom School is a five-day-a-week after-school program in Waterloo dedicated to delivering intensive literacy instruction and a culturally responsive curriculum to bridge the academic opportunity gap among low-income public school students. Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and Waterloo native Nicole Hannah Jones founded the school with the help of local educators. The school's motto is Liberation Through Literacy, reflecting the Black tradition of believing education is the key to freedom. The school is free to fourth and fifth graders whose standardized test scores show they require academic support. Teachers are certified current and retired teachers from the Waterloo Community School District with more than 100 combined years of teaching experience. Jamie Dare, Wartburg's College's executive chef, recently won the 10th annual Chefs Take a Stand competition with a candied bacon BLT on toasted rosemary focaccia. I made a similar sandwich when I owned a bar and grill in New Orleans. One of our customers requested a BLT, so I used what we had in the kitchen to create this beauty. He was in a jazz band called Mo Betta Blues. So it was named after him on our menu, the Mo Better BLT, Dare said. I have since added the brown sugar to candy the bacon, and the rosemary focaccia is the perfect accent to this delicious sandwich. The event, a fundraiser for Friends of the Family programs that help those in crisis due to domestic violence, sexual assault, human trafficking, and homelessness, featured food from several Cedar Valley chefs. Dare also won the title in 2023. My mother has volunteered with Friends of the Family for years, so it was initially in her honor. Since that time, I have been working with the staff there in a number of capacities, so now it's a matter of doing whatever I can to help this amazing charity, she added. Wartburg College offers several dining and catering options. For more information, visit wartburg.edu/dining. Leader Valley, a Cedar Valley nonprofit organization known for its commitment to leadership development, is launching the Elevate Leadership Academy. The 8-month collaborative learning experience is designed to empower mid to upper level leaders to navigate the complexity of today's dynamic business landscape while preparing them for the challenges of tomorrow. Leader Valley enters this next phase after already having an impact on the Cedar Valley community, serving over 11,000 students across 27 schools through the Leader in Me program. Additionally, Leader Valley has expanded its offerings to include leadership accelerator courses and custom leadership development sessions for businesses like Talk to Me Technology, John Deere, Lincoln Savings Bank, and the University of Northern Iowa. According to Leader Valley, Elevate Leadership Academy stands out for its timely and relevant curriculum, placing a strong emphasis on both individual leadership growth and the mastery of leading others. Participants can expect to undergo a journey of self-awareness and skill enhancement, culminating in the ability to make a significant impact within their organizations and the broader Cedar Valley community, said Melissa Reed, Leader Valley Executive Director. Through a blend of content focused on leading you and leading others, participants will acquire the essential knowledge and skills needed to lead effectively in today's ever-evolving landscape. Leading You content focuses on personal leadership development, nurturing emotional intelligence, fostering a growth mindset, instilling personal accountability, and promoting overall wellness among participants. Meanwhile, Leading Others content equips leaders with the tools to mobilize their teams toward greatness, including skills in team development, effective communication, and fostering well-being among team members. Ideal Academy candidates are individuals with demonstrated leadership experience who are committed to enhancing their impact in both professional and community spheres. Applications will be open from May 1st to July 19th. For more information and to apply, go online to leadervalley.org. The Bluedorn Science Imaginarium, 322 Washington Street, will be holding Late Night at the Imaginarium on Thursday. Visitors can enjoy the Imaginarium outside of normal hours from 5 to 8 p.m. Science demonstrations will be held at 6 and 7 p.m. Admission is $8 for adults and children ages 4 to 13. Children 3 and younger and museum members get in free. For more information, go to gmdistrict.org or call 319-234-6357. Trees for Cedar Valley will soon be planting trees around 4th and Lime Streets for Arbor Day on Friday. College students and volunteers will start with a groundbreaking event there at the corner at noon Friday and proceed to plant trees by East High School, 214 High Street, and People's Community Health Clinic, 905 Franklin Street. Trees for Cedar Valley is a student-led group at the University of Northern Iowa, advised by Professor Jamie Renfro through a seminar class in public administration called Race and Public Policy. The Iowa National Guard and AmeriCorps have committed to providing volunteers for the project. Vine Valley Real Estate will be providing volunteers and financial support. The Cedar Valley Sportsplex Pump and Run 5K is back for a third year on Friday and April 27th. Participants do bench press and bicep curls using a percentage of their body weight on Friday to earn a reduction in their 5K time on Saturday. For every repetition completed, 10 seconds will be taken off the 5K time. Those not wanting to lift weights can still participate in the run. From 3 to 6 p.m. on Friday, one of the largest health expos in Iowa will be at the Sportsplex to highlight the healthy resources in the Cedar Valley. During that time, there is a race packet pickup where money raised will go toward healthy outreach programs for Waterloo Community Schools and the Boys and Girls Club of the Cedar Valley. This year, kids ages 12 and under can run for free. To register, go online to cvsportsplex.org. In an attempt to reach out to area youth, editors of the University of Northern Iowa's literary magazine, North American Review, launched a contest to name the first ever Cedar Valley Youth Poet Laureate. The winner was announced at a commencement event on Saturday. Lama Pratchett, 18, and a student at Waterloo's East High School, was chosen as the winner after competition finalists read their poems in front of a full house at the Interpreters Theater in Lang Hall on the UNI campus. The event was the culmination of a competition in which teens living in the Cedar Valley could submit up to 3 poems. 11 poets were chosen by NAR editors to compete at Saturday's event. Musicians Justin Holmes on bass and Vince Rodemista on drums gave the whole evening a definite coffeehouse vibe. Each of the 10 attending poets stepped in front of a microphone to read their poems. Along with being named Youth Poet Laureate, Pratchett received a scholarship to UNI, $250, an engraved medal, and other prizes. She was also offered the opportunity to have her work published on the magazine's open space site. Pratchett read 3 of her poems, Chaotic Hindering Attributes Overthinkers Suffer With, Love Is With My Soulmate, and Emotionally Unavailable. She has been writing since she was about 10 years old. I write about stuff I couldn't talk about, that other people didn't want to talk about. Life's problems, trauma. I like to write stuff for people to relate to, she said. She added her inspiration comes from her personal experiences and from other poets' work. Pratchett has only read her work in public once before. It was a small spoken word event at the library. She was nervous about reading her poetry in front of the crowd, but had a number of supporters in the audience. Some family and some friends and 2 of my favorite teachers were there, she said. That made me feel more comfortable seeing their faces and more confident. Pratchett was impressed by her competition. I love how they all had something to share. Some of them hit really hard. I appreciate the other poets, she said. 2 runners-up also received scholarships and other prizes. Maddie Gallagher of Cedar Falls High School was first runner-up, and Mariana Torres of East High School was second runner-up. Other finalists were Brooklyn Barumas, Ryan Herring, and Perseus Batista Pedro from Waterloo's West High School, Wynn Greenlee and Ripley Wakeham from UNI, Wren Woods from Starmont High School in Arlington, Joss Hornell from Green Mountain Garwin High School, and Sapphire Lewis from Applington Parkersburg High School. Judges for the event were poets Kim Groninger and Angie Sievers, and UNI English professor and NAR editor Grant Tracy. Participants were judged on three criteria: craft, creativity, and expression. Tracy said he couldn't be happier with how the event went. UNI's Rachel Morgan, Jeremy Schraffenberger, and Emily Stowe, all editors with the NAR, were instrumental in bringing the commencement to fruition. In October and February, Morgan and Schraffenberger held workshops for teens to write and share their work. About 20 students attended the workshops, Schraffenberger said. We are starting small, but hoping to get the word out so we can grow. We are hoping to reach more youth in the area. The North American Review is the oldest literary magazine in the United States and has been housed at UNI since 1969. The National Youth Poet Laureate Program has been around about 15 years, Schraffenberger said. We are doing this because we are trying to reach a different community we don't normally reach. We have a national audience, but we would like to get more involved in the local community. Schraffenberger said they will discuss Pratchett's role as Youth Poet Laureate, but it will include helping to teach future workshops. We believe young people have the ability to create important works of art, and they therefore deserve a venue to develop and share their ideas and experiences with the world, he said. In order to create, grow, and sustain that venue, we hope to secure more funding and resources so that we can reach even more young people in the Cedar Valley. Donations can be made to the Cedar Valley Youth Laureate Program online at northamericanreview.org. The Western Home Foundation announced the recipients of the 2024 Child Care Scholarships, totaling $14,400, awarded to 7 employees of Western Home Communities. These scholarships aim to recognize their dedication and service while supporting their families. Scholarship recipients are Haley Burbridge, Business Office Associate, Dakota Chavez, Medication Aide at Madrid Home, Jofeli Corona, Employee Health Nurse, Megan Grimm, Fortified Lifestyle Coach, Morgan Lehman, Director of Wellness, Maggie Rottinghouse, Physical Therapy Assistant, and Rose Stone, Massage Therapist. The Scholarship Fund was established by Kay and Willard Jenkins to honor and support the hardworking employees of Western Home Communities. Western Home Communities has an excellent record of having well-trained and caring employees, so we thought this scholarship would both recognize their admirable service and aid them in providing for their families, the Jenkinses said. In addition to recognizing the recipients, this initiative serves to attract and retain exceptional individuals for the future growth of Western Home Communities. The Jenkins will celebrate this year's scholarship recipients at a luncheon in May. For more information about Western Home Foundation and its initiatives, go to westernhome.org/foundation. You are listening to the Tuesday, April 23rd, 2024 reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now, Let's turn to today's obituaries. Paul Franklin Lovelace, 94, formerly of Hudson, died Saturday, April 13th at Memorial Hermann City Hospital, Houston, Texas. Paul was born October 13th, 1929 in Benton County on the family farm near LaPorte City. Following high school, he enlisted in the U.S. Air Force and honorably served for 4 years, attaining the rank of staff sergeant. Paul served his community as one of the first canine handlers for the Waterloo Police Department. He was an officer for WPD for 26 years until he retired in 1986. Paul could not deny the call to serve and took a position with the Hudson Police Department in 1987. He retired in 1992 as the chief of police there. He married Brenda Ackerson on August 21, 1976 in New Hartford. The funeral service for Paul will be at 11 a.m. on Thursday, April 25th at Dahl Van Hove Shoe Funeral Home. Visitation will be from 10 a.m. until the time of service on Thursday, April 25th at the funeral home. The burial will be at the Fairfield Township Cemetery in New Hartford. In lieu of flowers, please direct memorials to the Waterloo Police Protective Agency. Susan Rubies, 72, of LaPorte City, died Thursday, April 18th at Allen Memorial Hospital. She was born December 29th, 1951 in Mankato, Minnesota. She graduated from Wooden Crystal Lake High School and attended NIAC. She married Marvin Rubes on July 25, 1970, at the St. Patrick's Catholic Church in Britt. Together, they are members of the Sacred Heart Catholic Church of LaPorte City. Sue was the deputy city clerk for the city of LaPorte and then was the office manager for LaPorte City Utilities. Thursday visitation will be from 4:30 to 7 p.m., April 25th, at the Sacred Heart Catholic Church in LaPorte. Friday visitation will be at 1 p.m., April 26th, at St. Patrick's Catholic Church in Britt. Funeral services will follow at 2 p.m. at St. Patrick's Catholic Church in Britt. Interment will be in the St. John's Catholic Cemetery in Duncan. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to the LaPorte City Fire Department or the Sacred Heart Catholic Church. Peggy Joan Johnson Steen, 66, formerly of Waterloo, died Sunday, April 14th at Cedar Valley Hospice Home following a brief illness. She was born on February 7th, 1958 in Waterloo. She married Stephen Fain and had 3 children, but later divorced. She later married Melvin Steen. Services will be 11 a.m. on Saturday, June 1st, at Garden of Memories, Waterloo, with a luncheon following from 1 to 3 p.m. at American Legion Post No. 138, 728 Commercial Street in Waterloo. Memorials can be directed to American Legion Post No. 138 or to the family. Connie Nellis of Waterloo, formerly Early, passed away on December 13, 2023 at Harmony in Waterloo at the age of 71. Connie Jo was born on October 21, 1952 in Storm Lake. She graduated from Crestland Community School in 1970. She earned her Bachelor of Music Education from Morningside College in 1974 and her Master's of Music Education from the University of Iowa in 1981. Connie Jo spent her entire teaching career in the Waterloo Community School District. She also shared her musical talents with various churches in the Waterloo area, as well as giving private piano lessons. Memorials may be given to the Waterloo First United Church for their music program. Riley Gilbert of Hudson passed away on April 16th, doing what he loved most, riding his Harley. Max Dean Grover, 88, of Rowley, died Thursday, April 18th. Arlen Pook, aged 94, of Reedland, died Thursday, April 18th. Visitation is at the Kaiser Corson Funeral Home in Reedland. Funeral services will be held at 10:30 on Tuesday, April 23rd, at Emmanuel Lutheran Church in Klinger in rural Reedland. Burial is at the church cemetery. Gladys Peg Wentz, 91, of Waterloo, died in St. Louis on Sunday, January 21st. She was born September 29th, 1932, in Butler County. She married Bert Wentz on October 15th, 1952, at Washington Reformed Church in rural Ackley. Peg worked as a bookkeeper for her husband's construction company, Windmer Construction. She also enjoyed reading, gardening, playing bridge, volunteering, doing crafts and arts, spending time with her family, and shopping. Memorial services will be held at Westminster Presbyterian Church on Wednesday, May 1st at 1 p.m., with visitation at noon. Memorials may be directed to PEO, Pathways Hospice of Chesterfield, Missouri, or Knight Alzheimer's Disease Research Center at Washington University in St. Louis. Dr. David A. Whitsitt died after 82 years of meaningful, high-quality life. David's adventurous life began in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, where he and his sister Toni were raised by his parents. His close bond with his father ignited a passion for Pittsburgh Steelers, vintage cars, and motorcycles. After high school, he pursued his interest in human behavior through psychology at Penn State University, later earning his Ph.D. in organizational psychology from Case Western Reserve. His career led him to consulting firms in New York, where he was a specialist in managing large-scale change. He left a lasting impact on the organizations he worked with and published several books on the subject of organizational change management. David later moved to Cedar Falls, Iowa, joining the psychology faculty at UNI. He excelled at sparking students' excitement about psychology using his natural storytelling and presentation skills. He was deeply involved in UNI athletics, especially wrestling. He took pride in helping coaches and athletes create their own realities in pursuit of their highest level performance. David was an avid marathon runner. He guided a group running rim to rim in the Grand Canyon and co-created a marathon running course at UNI. The course culminated in a co-published book for new marathon runners. A celebration of life will be planned for later this year, with details forthcoming. In lieu of flowers, the family requests donations in Dr. David Witzel's memory to the Brain Support Network or the Michael J. Fox Parkinson's Foundation. Longtime Iowa football broadcaster Ed Podolak announced Monday he will move out of the radio booth this season and limit his appearances to program pregame shows and podcasts. Podolak played quarterback and running back for the Hawkeyes before he became a fixture at running back for the Kansas City Chiefs from 1969 to 1977. He was a color commentator for NBC and ESPN before he joined the Iowa radio team in 1982. He worked nearly 500 games alongside play-by-play men Jim Zabel and Gary Dolphin. I have said it often across 27 years that Ed Podolak is the best I've ever worked with in the broadcast booth, Dolphin said. One of the game's great competitors, Ed's ability to explain plays was unparalleled. football mentalities of all ages understood and enjoyed the humor each Saturday. I look forward to Eddie's continued involvement on game day. Podolak, 76, said in a statement he decided the time was right to step back from some of his broadcasting duties. I believe there is no greater honor than to be part of the Iowa Hawkeye football team, he said. I have loved watching these young men and coaches compete for the past 42 years, sharing my perspective for the incredible Hawkeye fans from coast to coast has been a thrill. Podolak was named First Team All-Big Ten and Team MVP in 1968 when he set a then-conference record with 286 yards on 17 rushing attempts against Northwestern. He had nearly 4,500 yards rushing and 2,500 yards receiving and a combined 40 touchdowns in 104 games for the Chiefs. He is a member of the Chiefs Hall of Fame. Trout Stocking Family Day is about getting the next generation hooked on fishing. At least 100 people spent the chilly and windy Saturday morning and afternoon casting lines and hoping for a big catch with their families on the shore of North Prairie Lake off Viking and Hudson Roads. It's an exciting time for many, especially when they land the ultimate prize. You can't beat that little smile on a kid when he catches a fish, said Tim Aarons, president of the Cedar Valley Walleye Club. The club and Shields partnered with the Iowa Department of Natural Resources to stock the body of water using a truck and a long tube. 1,700 fish were placed into the water. Organizers say that will make the spot a place to be for rainbow trout during the next month. What are these? Asked Cale Gotch, 4, of Cedar Falls, who was watching his grandfather Mike Doden fish. Some of what his mentor had were jigs and roadrunners. It was their first time at the event. I'm a pretty avid fisherman, Doden said as he taught his grandson about fishing, as well as the values of respecting those around them and being patient in the early goings as they were looking for their first catch. Meanwhile, their fishing neighbors had caught 3. Cale's mother, Nicole, came across the opportunity to fish on a poster at work. Her role was as support and the unofficial snack lady. It's fun to get outside and do something together as a family, she said. Now, in its 19th year, Aaron said the event draws closer to 200 people on average, if not for the cold weather. The first time it was held, less than 50 came out. The organizers also came together to serve up hot dogs, chips, and refreshments while offering other giveaways to complement the experience. The list included hundreds of tackles donated by Berkeley. Shields donated 50 tackle boxes for kids, and the club also had 10 poles available through a drawing. The Walleye Club president pointed out how people have better access to the lake after working with the city to reduce the cattails on its outskirts. The fun doesn't just stop after catching the trout. We like to keep most of our fish and cook fillets, said Asim Mustadinajic of Waterloo. He and his daughter Sophia, 8, have attended several trout stocking family days in the past and had already caught 3 fish in less than an hour. They're big outdoor stream and camping people. The daughter caught 1 fish, but it wasn't big enough. Dad threw it back in, Sophia said. The license limit is 5 fish per day at the lake. One family that didn't have to worry about exceeding that was the Bollingers of Cedar Falls, there for the first time just to soak up outdoor atmosphere at the event. They're more into hunting deer, pheasant, and squirrels than catching fish. They had come across the event in the city's Currents newsletter and were out doing some errands when they decided to check out the festivities. The community was off the leash in its generous support for the Cedar Bend Humane Society's recent pet food drive. On March 29th, the Courier published a story about the shelter's nearly bare cupboards and its struggle to feed 300-plus animals in the last 6 months. The story was widely shared across the Courier's social media platforms, and response from the public was immediate and overwhelming, said Christy Gardner, executive director. We were amazed, just blown away, and we are so thankful to our community. After the story came out, we literally had people all day, every day, bringing in food. Within a couple of days, we had so much food donated that we had to move it out of our lobby. We couldn't open our front door, she said. Now, there are 10 to 12 pallets filled with donated 20, 40, and 50-pound bags of dog and cat food. We have enough to hold us for a little while. We're starting to hit our busy season with puppies and kittens, so the food will not last us all summer. It helps feed our immediate need and gives us a little bit of leeway, Gardner explained. The need to feed the shelter's dogs and cats prompted former Cedar Falls resident Dave Lipinski to create a GoFundMe campaign to raise money for the shelter. Lipinski and his wife, Susie, pledged to match the donations above their initial personal donation, bringing the total gift to $1,790. I first adopted two dogs from Cedar Bend in 2005, Brown Dog and Katie, and they were wonderful dogs. The adoption was a super smooth process, and Cedar Bend won me over, said Lipinski. Since 2018, the Lipinskis have made their home in Colorado, where Dave is a guide for Estes Park. After reading the Courier's story, I felt compelled to help. My heart is still a little in the Cedar Valley, and I could not help out. And 100% of the proceeds benefit Cedar Bend Humane Society, Lipinski said. He wasn't surprised by the response to his GoFundMe campaign. I'm super grateful. I know a lot of people, really great people, who, when you ask, you shall receive. We were going to match the contributions up to $1,000, so people knew I was serious. Cedar Falls Green Hill Fairway store at 4500 South Main Street offered to sell Lipinski the pet food at cost to maximize the donation. Dave has always been super passionate about dogs, and I'm a die-hard cat person, said manager Greg Harold, who has been friends with Lipinski for 25 years. I donated $100 to the GoFundMe campaign and saw they hadn't picked the place to get the food. The store donated $50, and we sold the food at cost and helped deliver it. I was happy to be part of it and help out our local fur babies. Yoletta Yoder of Cedar Falls, another Lipinski family friend, volunteered to coordinate with Lipinski, Fairway, and CBHS until the donation was delivered to the shelter April 15th. This isn't the first time Lipinski has shown his support for the shelter. The founder of Trekman Racing donated 100% of his services to establish the CBHS Furry 5K Run Walk fundraiser. The 15th annual event is May 18th, beginning at 9 a.m. at Big Woods Lake Recreation Area South Shelter. This is the first time in 5 years that the shelter has struggled to feed its homeless animals. Regular food donations have dwindled in recent years, and this spring CBHS found itself in dire straits. The nonprofit shelter is donation-based and operates on community support. Last year, 3,566 animals were brought into the shelter, including stray, surrendered, abandoned, and injured pets. The animals are fed twice daily, amounting to about 150 pounds of dog and cat food daily across three buildings. The shelter has been forced to pull funds from other areas, such as medical, to purchase food for its furry residents. Food is so simple and vital, but people think donating a bag of food is not a big deal. It is for us, and we are thankful for those donations. when we didn't have the food to feed our animals and no choice but to go out and buy it, that's a big chunk out of our medical fund, Gardner explained. About $5,000 in donations earmarked for food have been received so far. The public appeal for support also has provided access to more resources and is helping foster stronger partnerships with the area's supportive retailers and big box stores. Paw's Pantry, closed during the food shortage, likely will open in early May, Gardner said. Operated by CBHS, the pantry distributes pet food through the Northeast Iowa Food Bank for low-income pet owners. For information about adopting a pet or making food or other donations, go online to cedarbendhumane.org or call 319-232-6887. The Adoption Center is open from noon to 6 p.m. daily. The community is invited to a public celebration of Harlington Cemetery of Waverly. The Waverly Historic Preservation Commission is offering the opportunity from 10 a.m. to noon, May 11th, to tour the cemetery office, view two newly installed informational signs, and hear a program of stories and memories from Craig Maiman, retired cemetery superintendent. Join Terry Lindell's optional walking tour and honor the historic city cemetery and other local homeowners with historic preservation awards. The cemetery is off 8th Avenue Southwest. Anyone with questions can email kmcglaun@waverlyiowa.com. Music and Praise will present The Kramers in concert at 7 p.m. Tuesday, May 7th at Fellowship Hall, 439 North Division Street in Cedar Falls. No tickets or reservations are required. A love offering is received for the artists. The Kramers are a family from Illinois who perform gospel music. They provide a wide range of musical styles, blending family harmonies and skilled accompanying instrumentation with growing recognition and awards. M&P hosts concerts from April through October. For a full list of concerts, follow them on Facebook or Instagram at Music and Praise. For more information, email musicandpraise42@gmail.com. And that does it for today's reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for Tuesday, April 23rd, 2024. I'm your reader, Grace Barter. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. Thanks for listening.
From the Bureau of Economic Geology, this is Earth Date. Sometimes we have too much electricity, but more often, grid operators are carefully managing its production to be sure that we have enough. So, a lot of work has gone into trying to store excess electricity to use later when we need it. The obvious solution, giant batteries, is still too expensive for most applications and has environmental implications. This has led scientists to look for other ways. One method uses surplus power to compress air and pump it into old salt mines. The salt tends to seal cracks in the walls, making the mines airtight. When needed, the compressed air can be released to turn a turbine, or it can be used as the intake air for a natural gas power plant, making the plant more productive. Another way to store excess energy is to pump water uphill into existing reservoirs and then release it through hydroelectric dams when power is needed. This method was pioneered 100 years ago in Italy and Switzerland and is used today around the world and in many U.S. states, like Michigan. On the Chilean coast, they're even experimenting with using solar energy to pump seawater up a cliff where it could flow down to make power at night. These solutions don't make economic sense unless the electricity is very cheap and the reservoir was already built for another purpose. But when those two things are present, pumping air and water to store energy plays a valuable role in balancing the grid to meet our ever-changing power demands. For Earth Date, I'm Scott Tinker.
Earth Date is produced by the Bureau of Economic Geology at the University of Texas at Austin, with support from Schlumberger, helping oil and gas companies increase production and efficiency while lowering environmental impact. You can hear more Earth Date stories at earthdate.org.
Roxanne Watson is on a mission.
Hello, how are you doing today?
She wants more people to register as organ, eye, and tissue donors.
Are you an organ donor?
Yes, I am.
Yay! Yay.
My goal is to sign up the most people in the United States.
What drives her? Roxanne's own life was saved through the gift of a heart transplant, made possible by an organ donor.
I decided that day that I was going to devote myself to the cause of organ donation and signing people up and honoring my donor by doing that.
Now she's back to health, and she's a powerful force helping to save lives every day through her work. Imagine what you can make possible by leaving behind the gift of life.
8 people can be helped with the major organs, and up to 50 people can be helped with a little bit of everything. And when you think about it that way, that you could help that many people, it's amazing, it really is.
Learn more and sign up as an organ, eye, and tissue donor. Go to organdonor.gov. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Health Resources and Services Administration.